Everyone, and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman. You can call me H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel. You can call me Man Who Has Seen All of the Star Wars Movies.
Wow. And only about a month late, too.
You know, it's so funny that thinking about the delay on this show, obviously it's hard to be, and I should probably, against my better nature, stay away from topical things, but I just saw Rise of Skywalker now in my time, not audience time. I saw it 2 days ago. So I'm, ask me anything.
What did you think overall?
Oh, boy.
Were you also kind of thrown by the number of dancing cats in this one? Like, I know that, like, milk, whether it's Luke Skywalker's blue milk from the beginning of episode four, or whether it's him drinking milk straight out of an animal in episode eight, it was kind of a recurring gag, but like they really knocked up the amount of milk references in this one.
I think once you realize the galaxy is kind of much like Dune and Spice, the galaxy of Star Wars is powered by milk. Milk flows through it. And then to find out that milk is very connected with the Force, I think it all worked.
It penetrates us and binds us.
Right, right. And it all worked for me. I think it never not worked for me.
Okay, great. Well, obviously they did go back and re-release a new version of the film with some of the actors' hands edited out and fixing a couple of background mistakes. So That's fun.
Did you actually hear about this? We are living through history. Do you remember when the Xbox 360 allowed a game, or some console allowed the first patch of a video game? And gamers were like, they're going to start releasing games that aren't finished and they're going to be all buggy.
Were right, though. We got to give it to them.
Right, exactly. Gamers were right in this scenario. Well, I just found out yesterday that a film has has broken this barrier, and of course it will be the legendary Cats. It'll go down in history for that, right? Now what is going to happen to movies now that we can patch those?
I mean, or they're obviously going to start shipping with DLC. We've already actually seen that. We saw them re-release Spider-Man with an extra scene at the end or something like that, so people have to buy it all over again to experience the movie in its entirety.
What else are movies going to take from video games? Now we're going to get like, if it doesn't do well in the first weekend, the movie makers are going to come out and say they're committed to changing it, and here's the roadmap.
Well, we've already seen loot boxes as well. If you go back to the movie Clue back in the 80s or 90s, that they released different endings in different theaters.
That's crazy. We're living in a strange time, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, there's that.
All right, let's get to our video game ideas for the day. I think you're going first today. Let's call it that way.
So again, not to be topical, but I was listening to Waypoint Radio, one of my favorite gaming podcasts, and they pitched a video game idea, or one of their listeners did, and I was like, I'm stealing. This is going to be my pitch on the show because I really want to workshop it with you. They pitched an XCOM-style turn-based survival horror game. They specifically set it in the Resident Evil universe, but I think that can be up to us if we want to actually honor that or not. And that is basically the pitch. So turn-based survival horror, and I imagine there'll be all sorts of maybe stuff we can do with Mr. X in there and all kinds of crazy stuff.
All right, starting the clock. I think this is actually something that works pretty well because, I mean, honestly, the PlayStation era survival horror games aren't that far from being turn-based in and of themselves just because of how awkward movement is.
Yeah, and how slow.
And I don't
slow.
Mean that like as a backhanded compliment, like, or a backhanded insult, but it's just like, you know, it's slow. You have to really like plant yourself in a position, take as many shots as you can get away with within, you know, it's a very predetermined amount of time between the zombie kind of closing the distance between you and it and the rate of fire of your guns. So, you know, it it's not too dissimilar.
You could argue pacing wise that there's not a lot separating, say, Final Fantasy VII and Resident Evil 2 in terms of how you actually pace out the combat.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of random encounters, people popping up from behind things.
I like the idea of using a turn-based, you know, the Hitman Go-esque or the XCOM-esque system to kind of enhance or pull forward some of the themes of the old survival horror genre, like inventory management. Maybe you can only have just one or just two items on you at a time, as opposed to like a small backpack. And then you could do things like when you get into a room, know, okay, it's going to take me three turns to reach those bullets over there. So maybe I have time to kind of shoot, move, pick up those bullets. And, you know, I only had three bullets or whatever. So you're using as you're trying to kind of pick up and use makeshift weapons around the environment.
So one of the things that I think about with turn-based games is that actually it being pretty like stripped back, and I don't want to say relaxed in pace, but just the fact that it gives you the time to think about everything feels like an empowerment mechanic, as opposed to the disempowerment of having to kind of think on your feet and think on the fly. How do we want to balance these things together?
Well, geez, I know JRPGs have basically, at this point, outside of Pokemon, and arguably they should, have all but given up on turn-based combat. Maybe there is a little bit more of an active timer, like you can only take one action with a cooldown every so many seconds, and so you get a little bit more of a pacing to it, especially I could imagine it taking on almost like a Crypt of the Necrodancer-like feeling with other enemies that have agency to move independent and of whether or not it's, quote, their turn.
Yeah. I was also thinking of a recent game that came out this year, John Wick Hex, actually, which is made by Mike Bithell's team as a game in the John Wick universe, where it is, for all intents and purposes, a turn-based game where all of the events that you can do, the different things that you can, the verbs you can give John Wick to execute, all take up a certain amount of time on a timeline at the top of the screen, and then you have to kind of arrange those pieces to make the action scene play out in a certain way. But it is tense because your health carries over between levels. There's randomization of placement of enemies and types of enemies and stuff like that. And so, you know, there's elements that you can't count on that always kind of keep you guessing and never fully in control of your own destiny. It's not like a Hitman thing where you can really memorize everything and feel like the master of the space.
One of the things I enjoy from Hearthstone is the idea of the mana system and how you kind of accrue it slowly over time. And so I'm thinking, wouldn't it be interesting to use something like that so you can do the John Wick Hex thing of maybe in one turn you can queue up two to three different actions. Action take up a different amount of, you know, ability points or whatever you're going to call them in this scenario. So now you almost get to that Resident Evil, like, all right, in this turn I'm going to shoot once and stun the zombie. I'm going to turn around and take two steps, and I'm going to try and push over this bookshelf or something to block their path. But if I push over a bookshelf, it'll take me maybe two additional turns, or I got to lift up the bookshelf if I want to pass through that area later.
Yeah, and these are kind of like low-key the coolest parts of Resident Evil type games, where you're kind of retrofitting your environment to block off entrances and to close off windows and to even the placement of zombies. You might lure them into a corner that you know you can skirt past next time around. It's taking advantage of the space around you.
I like that. And then now you have the opportunity to have enemies with different attack patterns. And then maybe if you allow enemies to last for too many turns, you could do an RE4, like when they're, you know, you bust their head open, but they've kind of mutated into something even more threatening at that point. So like the virus itself can eat away at the enemies and mutate them over the, you know, even a being in a single room.
Yeah, so as time goes on, the enemies that you choose to deprioritize become more powerful, and so you can either spend the early part of the level kind of clearing up as many of the small enemies as you can before they become too powerful, or concentrate your power on the one kind of strong enemy to make sure that they don't completely obliterate you down the line.
What's kind of interesting to me about that is George Romero in Night of the Living Dead, the sort of original popular zombie fiction, I think really reinforces and hammers home the feeling of, look, one of these things, not really a threat, but a few of these things are, you know, especially in a confined space and over a certain period of time, like, your odds of survival just keep going down. The feeling of like focusing on the big strong guy only to be slowly overwhelmed by a few of the regular zombies could be really, I think, fit the Resident Evil theme very well.
Yeah, so let's think of a setting, something that we haven't seen explored dozens and dozens of times for a horror game.
Man, you know, they haven't made this sequel yet, but this would also be ripe as like a potentially easier to execute, lower budget thing for Dead Island to do. I imagine Dead Island would feel very much like almost like a Divinity or something with this kind of combat system.
It's okay, kind of a tropical feeling then. Might be a good way of like containing the levels and making sure that, you know, they feel like they are in a contiguous space. But having like natural borders and you know, things that you obviously can't get beyond.
I've got one that'll tickle Ubisoft's fancy. What if we set the whole thing in ancient Egypt and you're actually in a pyramid and there's mummies and tombs and you're trying to like escape a pyramid? So the very first levels are at the top of the pyramid. Maybe that's where you start the whole game. The rooms are obviously smaller, but every level you go down, they get bigger and more complex.
Okay, so yeah, I do like also this ancient Egypt has a lot of horror elements in it already. I think that's a nice way to take it. So yeah, I mean, obviously that also kind of makes it ripe for randomization and procedural content. Turn this into kind of a roguelike type thing if that's to your liking.
When you talk about settings, I'm wondering like, it's always a delicate balance, right? Because too much power and you'll feel, you know, it'll just totally go out of whack. But like, what's something unique we could do with the main character? Like maybe they themselves, I mean, this feels so cliche, but you could potentially be infected and it's really at the end or the other side of each level. You constantly have to be like making your way Pac-Man style to the power up spots so that you can inject yourself with the antidote and not like turn slowly into a zombie. That could also like the further you let it go, the more it costs you your ability points. And so you're getting kind of weaker as the enemies get stronger.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're out of time on that one. Let's close it down and come up with a name.
Okay. Again, we're going to set it in Egypt. And what about Pharaoh's Tomb Tactics?
That's so lame.
I know it's lame. Help.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Let's think of
I deserved
Egypt.
That, by the way. So don't anybody give H shit that, for giving me shit.
Not that we don't exclusively peddle in awful titles.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Actually, I'm trying to think if there's a pun off of King Tut that can be made, but I'm not coming up with anything.
Can we just do something like do a weird title treatment on just the word pyramid? The word pyramid itself is a little spooky, isn't it? There was Pyramid Head.
Yeah, and the A in the middle of the pyramid is a triangle already if you caps lock it. So that could be a fun kind of swap in a delta there. Yeah, okay. I think pyramid is a good name for this.
Pyramid, but you have to figure out how to type it with an upside down V. So it looks really cool.
Yeah. We can, I can arrange for that.
Thank you.
Well, now that you've pitched your pyramid scheme, I'm going to be doing, well, this is potentially a little lazy.
It's not a video game pyramid idea. Scheme. It's a multi-level marketing dungeon.
Marketing dungeon. I like it. So this is potentially a little bit lazy, but let's see where it goes, because I was inspired by something recently and I want to see what kinds of ideas we can come up with. I've been inspired by just kind of going through a few fighting games recently. I've reinstalled like King of Fighters 13 and Arcana Heart 3 and BlazBlue and
you're talking
Under Night Inbirth.
Fighting games.
Like Japanese Air Dash fighters, they call them. I love just some of the like crazy weird designs of some of these characters, of just like super wild ideas that like you just never see in other genres of games, because I don't know, there's something about the like Japanese fighting games that just like invites that layer of creativity and weirdness. And so like in particular I was thinking of I think it's Bedman from Guilty Gear Xrd series, which is just a sentient hospital bed with a coma victim just lying in it, and it like the bed itself is what like jumps around and starts fighting. And Arcana Hearts 3 Love Max has a character who is a young girl who is being carried and protected by a crayon drawing of a monster that she created that somehow came to life. And like, just these like cool, crazy, weird ideas. Arcana Heart has a swimmer who like basically like carries around with her, like basically the lower half of her body is like encased in a like a big droplet of water that she can like kind of swivel around with her, so like she can still swim but above line. I don't know, there's some like weird stuff out there, and basically I just kind of want to open the floor to like, what are the weirdest fighting game characters that we could come up with for if we were trying to come up with a Japanese Air Dash fighter? Let's start the clock and see what we can do.
Okay.
I think getting the starting point on this one's going to be the hardest.
You're right. Once we get there, it'll start flowing.
Yeah. Maybe there's a twist on just to cite another example, one of my like all-time favorite fighting game characters is, I think it's Big Band from Skullgirls, who's just like what looks like a large, heavy-set person in a trench coat, which is actually an entire band of brass instruments, kind of with a trench coat haphazardly draped over them, that as he kind of jumps around, all these little bits of trombone slides and tuba horns and all just like poke out of the trench coat and do all the attacks. Like, that's just incredibly clever, and I like that kind of thing. So I was wondering if there's like a take on the drunken master archetype, where we can tie together all these different types of like alcohols and stuff that could go into, I don't know whether this person is living inside of a bottle or whether they are made of drinks and stuff.
I like the idea of what would the Japanese Air Dash fighter be of like Bo Raicho from Mortal Kombat. Mm. Like potentially he's got like, maybe he fights with like a wine fridge. And so he's kind of always got access to kind of like reach his hand inside and like throw bottles of wine and smash them up. And of course that makes the stage all sort of like slippery or whatever. So there's multiple angles you can go with that.
Actually, a refrigerator would be a super fun enemy because there's just like so much that you could like put inside of it, and it's like unpredictable, big and hulking figure, you know.
Yeah.
It's not something I would want to see angry and coming after me.
It's too bad we got to food so quick, because my mind started wandering to like a ramen noodle chef that would have literally giant bowls of like sentient ramen noodles that kind of like jumped out of the bowls and kind of wrapped
up
enemies.
He'd be like holding a giant pot in front of him and constantly stirring it, and like,
yeah,
you know, things could come out of the pot, like an octopus tentacle to rip people, or to tie people up, or like he can throw bowls that can crash on people. That'd be fun.
I wonder, what if we got some like representation in there and did like a almost a Professor X, like somebody who needs the assistance of a wheelchair, but they've also got that kind of like talk to type feature or switch control, uh-huh, where they've got like the wheelchair itself has all sorts of claws and mechanisms and stuff that can come out, and the maybe depending on the word that they speak, like the words are pow and hya and like all these kind of like crazy things that are projectiles that do damage.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good one. Maybe there's a different type of character that is like, it is a let's call it two haunted dolls. And so one of them is like big life size, kind of creepy scarecrow type thing. The other one is like a small doll sized, you know, Annabelle type figure. And then the players can switch like which doll the spirit is presiding within. So if you choose to be the small figure, then maybe you lose a lot of your mobility because you don't have, you know, access to move around the legs of the big one anymore, but your hitbox is super small, so they have to be very precise in where they hit. And then you can switch back to the bigger one to move around a lot more, but maybe the attacks are, you know, all shorter range or something like that.
I'm sure this has been done, but especially an anime game is ripe for just straight up a tank to be one of the combatants, like literally. And of course, right, a normal person, well, quote unquote normal, a person is going to have still a fighting chance against the tank, but the tank mm-hmm. can kind of like spin its cannon for like spin attacks. It can obviously, it has projectiles and stuff and can do wheelies and kind of drive over people. And there's probably a lot. I think like the theme of some of these things is like, what if you just put a vehicle or a strange thing in the place of a human?
Yeah. I mean, there's in Fighters Mega Mix back on the Sega Saturn. I think we've referenced this numerous times on the podcast, but you can play as a car from Daytona, USA, standing up and then punching using its wheels.
Oh, that's so good.
I know. It's perfect.
You could do it to see, yeah, you could do somebody, I guess the stand in today would be give me a Trials Rising, or a Trials biker, mm-hmm. Who's just kind of always on the back wheel of the bicycle mm-hmm. and flip around and do all sorts of stuff.
That'd be fun.
Putting Tony Hawk in there would actually probably still be good.
I mean, because we can, let's see if we can work out the degrees of separation between Tony Hawk and, well, I guess it would be 1 degree of separation because Tony Hawk was in a game with Spider-Man and Iron Man, who were both in Marvel versus Capcom games. He was also in games with Star Wars characters, but none of those were in Terra Casa, so I guess those don't count, but yeah. Isn't that Marvel versus Capcom in?
Hey, here's a thought, right? Now as we're like going through, what if you did something where you had like straight up one player is, you know, a regular character and the other player is like an arcade gamer. Mm-hmm. They've got like a Puyo Puyo interface and they can like drop things from the sky. Mm. And then you literally have a puzzle fighter like in there, like the other person is battling like the falling objects and stuff. Or okay, maybe that person has like pinball things that they can kind of hurdle back and forth.
Maybe there's like a representation of like a dream and a nightmare. And as different events take place, it can trigger switching between the two forms. Maybe one can heal itself and one is more aggressive. It's kind of like I really love in Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom 3, how you could play as Phoenix Wright and you could walk around the stage. There was a button to collect evidence and it would just pick up a random piece of evidence from the ground. And, you know, based on randomization for each match, certain types of evidence would be correct for certain matches and certain pieces of evidence would just be red herrings. And so you'd have to throw out the ones that weren't correct, keep the ones that were. And if you got the three that were, then you can go into trial mode and all of your attacks became a lot stronger and you got, you know, a different move set. You were faster and more deadly. But I just love like that you had that task to do of picking up evidence in Frank West from Dead Rising worked the same way in Marvel versus Capcom 3, where you were taking pictures of the enemy at the same time as you were trying to fight them.
That's cool. I love the idea of pairing as well, like to have Dr. Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster, like as two different, you know, two different characters on screen at the same time. And maybe he's got like electrodes or something hooked up to him. So you're actually partially controlling his actions and you're partially the doctor and you can go, you know, swap back and forth with that.
Yeah. That's kind of fun. Let's get one more before time runs out. Maybe it's a take on evolution with like a fighter that evolves throughout the match, depending on like choices that you make early on. So it starts off as kind of like maybe it starts off as an egg. And then based on what types of attacks you do, whether it's punches or kicks. Then it grows different limbs when it hatches, and then it's kind of like a three-phase thing throughout the match, and it becomes like a completely different type of fighter depending on what you do to the opponent and what the opponent does to you.
I love it. Let's round it out with the most obvious choice and the one that is actually likely to happen. Shovel Knight just shows up.
Has Shovel Knight, other than as a cameo in Smash Bros., has Shovel Knight been... Yes, Shovel Knight has been in a video game. What was it called?
I feel like Shovel Knight was showing up in everything at some point. Shovel Knight just like... I don't know if they like made everyone... like hold them hostage. Like if you want your character in the next Shovel Knight, you got to put Shovel Knight in your game.
Yeah. Right now. Shovel Knight was in a fighting game called Blade Strangers, which is produced by Nick Callis, that, you know, that indie company. There was also characters from Code of Princess and Cave Story and a couple of The Binding of Isaac. Isaac was in that one as well. So that's a wacky fighting game that, yeah, that's a interesting combination of characters. Anyways, we're out of time. That was a fun little exercise. So let's close that one down and let's come up with a name. I'm going to insist on giving this one a wacky Japanese name, like, you know, like Undernight in Birth EXE colon late square brackets ST square brackets, you know, that kind of thing. So let's come up with something here.
I think that that's good. We got to get the word sessions in there somewhere as well.
Yeah, yeah.
What a rink is a fighting rink? Rink sessions? XE? Ring sessions SE colon, right? That's uh-huh. The beginning.
Maybe a semicolon just to kind of stay true to our brand.
Right. And then I'm just thinking about like that Dragon Quest title from this year.
Parabolic Source, but all one word with inconsistent capitalization.
Yeah, Parabolic is all lowercase, but Source is all uppercase.
Except for like one of the letters, and there's probably a story reason for that.
Right, a lowercase c.
And then /// 2002 ver.
/// what if you did 3.9 remix HD?
That's veering dangerously close to a game that already exists.
I didn't realize that was honestly off the dome.
That's Kingdom Hearts there.
I know the HD remix was Kingdom Hearts, but I do love the idea of like putting remix in there because there's Fighters Mega Mix, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what if we did 3.9 Mega Mix or something?
Just like 3.9 cross. I feel like crosses in all of these as well.
Cross battle. Is it a cross tag battle?
Cross, yeah, okay. Well, let's stop adding on to that name. I feel like we can do another 10 minutes just on the naming.
This is the best bit we've ever done on this show. My love for it knows no bounds. It is very... Video games are so stupid. Why do we like them? Oh my God.
The next email from our community comes from Sea of Games, which has a strange profile picture. It seems to be of like a footballer emblem as well as a screen name that just seems to be like a random regular email address. I'm thinking this is probably a nefarious email.
I don't know if you have signed us up for these emails.
I've not signed us up for anything, but okay. I have openly encouraged people to on the podcast. So I'm guessing we're getting a deluge of stuff.
Yeah.
But anyways, this is, I don't know what this is. There's a picture at the top of the email. That's just a kind of a small picture of the ocean with Sea of Games written in a font that doesn't necessarily contrast with the background picture all that well. Across it. With the headline
black
says
on dark blue.
It's time to enjoy the best time of the year. And it is as of the time of recording. We probably received this back in July 26th. So
so it really is time to enjoy the best time of the year.
Yeah. We are an exciting of game developers and players. We are an exciting of game developers and players. We launched the site on 2019 and want to build huge community for game lovers. This website will be a platform for those who want to share ideas on games. You can read reviews on latest games. Those games for which we can provide downloads will be shared as well. We want your full participation in keeping this gaming community alive. We'll post reviews, game details, latest game expected releases, etc. All right, so it seems like kind of a website for a collation of game data. Let's see. We also have copyright 2019, Sea of Games, all rights reserved. All right. You're receiving this email because you opted in via our website. Don't think that's true. Our mailing address is Sea of Games, Lot Eshalal, Casablanca 20,000, which might be a cool direction to chase as well. Casablanca 20,000.
Casablanca 20,000, we just got the name of this game, I think, for free.
In Morocco. So let's see what we can do with that. We have a Sea of Games and Casablanca 20,000. Let's go ahead and start the clock.
So as you were reading through this email, it started to crystallize a little bit for me that we've kind of done the game smasher game pitch. We've pitched the very premise of this show, pitching video games back and forth. I love the idea of you are working in a consumer game review factory thing, and you basically just get to watch a momentary gameplay clip from a random thing, right? Just like all the people have to do is like make gameplay clips, the developers rather, and they don't have to be from real games. They just kind of have to look like they're rendered in a game engine. And then you have to write like very quick 3 to 5 word reviews about those games.
That would be kind of fun to very cynically, and this might play into a narrative that we don't want to feed into, but to task players with playing through a certain number of games, kind of Papers, Please style, but then write little reviews or kind of curate them on a storefront, categorize them somehow. They're all procedurally generated and very simple, but like, you know, you really have to get through as many as you can in a very short amount of time as possible. And then, you know, based on the very limited amount of time that you get to spend with them, and kind of see how your review does, whether it gels with the community opinion or whether it deviates from the Metacritic.
I love the idea too of like you submit your review and instantly you see like the community flag, like thumbs up, thumbs down. It very quickly gets totaled, and then you can use the totals to gauge like how closely you had the game pegged. Because I think like we all prefer as gamers to watch a clip of gameplay, at least I do, over a cutscene in a game, right?
Yeah.
And because like we have so much history and we have so much context that like we see 3 seconds of gameplay and we're like, oh, I get it. I know what this thing is. Very rarely are you like confused. So it could be really fun to see, like, it's almost test your gamer instincts, right? Like how quickly can you peg this thing off of, a 5 minute clip of somebody playing it?
Yeah, I think the difficulty would be then kind of creating all of these different little animations and stuff to be viewed, because either you would have to, I mean, you could take real clips of real games, but then there's like familiarity with the games would lead you to already have like an unfair advantage over the system that wouldn't really like feed into the type of game that we want to make here and the experience we want to give. Maybe the game kind of generates them, kind of like we've seen recently in Super Mash on the Epic Games Store, that can take a few kind of predefined elements and remix them in a way that it creates something new. But then you start to like understand the algorithm and how it does it, and it becomes less challenging pretty quickly, I would expect.
Oh, H, makes no bones about it. I was planning on the developers of this game, whoever make this game, have to make like 10,000 clips of games that do not exist. Like this game is straight up not a real game. You just, maybe it's more like Name That Tune, where you only get like a single clip of a game and just like it lasts for a flash. And then you're like, that was a dungeon crawler, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that would be kind of fun as kind of like a quiz type, you know, see how many of these games you could recognize thing. But yeah, you know, I don't know if we've found the way in just yet. Let's keep thinking about what can a sea of games give us. This idea of a sea is very, very evocative as well. And then being set, you know, 19,000 years in the future, or 18,000 rather.
Casablanca 20,000. Good question. I'm trying to think about, like, there's this visualization that the television industry, and I feel like even occasionally the video game industry, uses when they're trying to talk about, like, a breadth of content. I think PlayStation Now uses it. I think Game Pass has used it at some point, where it's like literally a wall of, like, gameplay videos all happening at the same time. Like, multiple clips from multiple games all being played in a big grid. I wonder if you, like, took those and made those, like, floating elements in an ocean, and, like, somebody's like, I'm looking for this game, and they give you a vague description of the game, and then you actually are, like, you go out to sea and you swim, and you have, like, some special thing that, like, is able to scan these little, you know, waterproof cartridges and then, like, see a clip of games in them, and you're actually swimming in a sea of games.
I wonder if you could have a grid of gameplay clips that are going on, kind of like the Architect's, is that the name? Architect's House in the Matrix Reloaded, which is like their wall of televisions.
Vis-a-vis.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then you have to play kind of like a Bejeweled Match 3 type of game with it, where you have to, like, draw lines between games that have something in common. Then based on what they have in common, they can kind of group together under, you know, maybe you selected three action games. Maybe you selected three games that were made in the year 2015. Maybe you selected three games that, and, you know, just all these different categories, three games out of Japan. And you know, they kind of build on each other, and it's kind of like a 2048 or threes in a way, where you're grouping more and more stuff together until eventually you can't group anymore, and then you just kind of see how you did.
This actually reminds me of oh my god, I apologize in advance for the quote I'm about to say, an app I've always wanted to make, where I've always been interested in pursuing the, like, the thought of what game do you want to play right now? Mm-hmm. And that is some cocktail of your existing taste, your current mood, and then other factors like maybe what's new or what your friends are playing or what you're, like, aiming to experience in that moment. And, like, all of those things go into shaping your game taste. But, like, I always find myself, I have a sea of video games, literally. I think I've got, like, 400 Steam games or some stupid number like that. And yet, probably maybe twice or three times a year, I get the feeling of, like, I don't know what I want to play right now. I know I want to play something, but I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And so maybe a game that kind of allows you to explore that feeling and explore that space of, like, somebody doesn't know what they want and you're somehow finding it and retrieving it for them.
Maybe it does. It pulls in kind of the Steam store interface. You know, we're recording this during the Steam winter sale. And so it's an incredibly addictive thing to, like, find things at their lowest price and, you know, across Steam and GMG and GOG and all these different websites and, you know, and max out your collection and stuff. Like, buying games I enjoy almost more than playing them sometimes. And maybe there's a way to gamify buying games. Maybe people come to you with certain requests for types of games that they're into and the amount of money that they're willing to spend, and you have to maximize their enjoyment and value out of it by, you know, fake purchasing for them real games that do exist.
Right. Yeah,
create a collection that way.
I'm trying to think about, like, what, you know, here we are looking at the sea of games email and, you know, what it means to be in a sea of games. And, like, what if games themselves could actually become a substance or a texture? And, like, how would the content of a game, or maybe the genre of a game, you know, affect that texture? Maybe this is a game about, like, tricky. Sailing the sea. As you enter different parts of the ocean, you are kind of, like, tugged into different genres of gameplay.
Whoa, we are at our 10 minutes, so that's introducing a pretty heavy concept.
we were out to sea on this one.
I appreciate the ambition there. Maybe we can throw that back out to the community and see what all of you come up with. But anyways, for now, we have to give this one a name. So we have a couple of great names to choose already. We have Sea of Games, which I think makes sense for what we made. We could just, call it Casablanca 20,000, just as a complete misnomer. that would be a brave take to put that out into the world without really earning it in any way.
Didn't Casablanca have some air travel? I've never seen Casablanca, Shubi. I've never done it. So wasn't there something with like an airplane or something in Casablanca that has some significance?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a significant scene at the end where a character chooses whether or not to get onto an airplane.
Got it. Okay. Wow. And thank you for doing that spoiler free for one of the oldest films ever made.
I'll just give people some time to catch up with it, you know?
Exactly.
Still a little fresh.
The statute of limitations still applies. yeah, maybe there's something to you're on the Sea of Casablanca or something. I mean, we're definitely retconning it, but
the seas of Casablanca 20,000.
Or you, I mean, well, we have Game of Seas. Like that's a little more. It's a little bit more Game of Thronesy. We get some more SEO juice out of Game of Seas or Seas of Game.
Seas of Game. See,
that sounds like you're swimming in ducks or something.
I mean, this, if it isn't Casablanca, it wouldn't be far away from the Sea of Thebes, which is getting dangerously close to a game that already exists as well. But let's go for, what is it? Sea of Casablanca 20,000. I think that's a mashup of titles that doesn't actually speak towards anything or give any real context.
All right, that's it. I've given up hope for 2020 being a year of good video game names from us. I shouldn't have had such delusions of grandeur.
All right. Well, anyways, thank you, Sea of Games, for emailing us at playwrightcast@gmail.com. You can also pitch your own video game idea. It doesn't have to be fully formed at all. It could be literally anything.
Just take it from us.
at playwrightcast.com/pitch, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast.
Triple, double, single, special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World, off the album Blue Noise. And go check out all the other great shows on the Kane and Rince Quality Video Game Discussion Network. Sound of Play, you can hear more of Mr. H here, and you can hear Leon, and they do interviews with game composers, and Sound of Play is definitely one of my favorites. Kane and Rince just had this past week or something that I feel like I love and I played. What was the most recent episode?
let's see, we
Donkey
had
Kong Country?
Yeah, we had Donkey Kong Country Returns, I believe.
Okay, well, do we love Donkey Kong Country Returns?
I like it. Yeah.
Okay.
Not just because of the old ones, but you know, and then Tropical Freeze again kind of bested it. And so it is kind of like that middle point of being kind of neither the best of neither world, but it is still a solid game.
I really want another, like, what would the Mario Galaxy be for Donkey Kong at this point? That would be fun.
Interesting. Oh, well, we'll save that for next week.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, wait a minute. I just burned the miniature pitch for the week.
So use it.
Yeah. Anyway, then of course there's, that was Kane and Rince. And then the Sausage Factory. Go listen to interviews with game developers. It's really crazy. And if you're not a patron yet, this is the year to do it. Shop, go get a t-shirt. There's a lot of ways for you to spend some money, but spend money thoughtfully, right? If you don't have the money, don't spend it. If you do, it's a great way to support the creators that you love.
And with that, let's take ourselves out with a miniature pitch.
All right.
I think this is yours again, yeah.
With your permission.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. We need Donkey Kong Country's Mario Galaxy, where Donkey, here we go, I'll expand upon it, goes to multiple islands all over a tropical planet and makes all sorts of new friends and adventures and all kinds of great 3D platforming challenges.
All right.
And he has a sentient tie. No, wait. No, he doesn't. I take it back.
I love that. They could just call him Deke or something like, well, no, I don't know. Just thinking of a fun way to tie in the letters, but That is another thing where it's like, okay, so Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, as you play as the different characters, you know, you can play as Donkey Kong, Funky Kong, Cranky Kong, Diddy Kong, Dixie Kong. It does like that kind of like in Donkey Kong Country Returns, it did that kind of like Batman type scene transition where like the DK logo would fly towards the screen and fly backwards.
Oh yeah,
to transition into different scenes. Yeah, and so in this one they did a different one of those for all of the different characters, and almost without exception, they all are like regrettable choices. Like DK just says like DK, you know, whatever we're used to it by now, but if you were to say it phonetically, then obviously you would be having a bit of a chuckle there. And then Dixie Kong is DX, which obviously, you know, same problem. Cranky Kong is CK, which, you know, whatever. Funky Kong is FK, which is like, okay, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And then Diddy Kong is let's see, I think Diddy Kong was DK? Just, I think Diddy Kong was just DD, which I think is not the worst of it, unless you, I guess you can like tie it into bra sizing or something like that.
Yeah,
but
double D. He's the safest of the bunch though, huh? Who would have guessed it?
Yeah, the safest of the bunch, you know him well.
Yeah, because everybody knows he is the horniest of the whole bunch, so.
It's true.
That's why he's like, you guys don't need to be reminded. You know, I bring that energy any game I show up in.
All right. Well, we've gone on for too long already. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.